Indeed it does, and we thank you so much for being here with us. Jason Ross, I'm Damian Barling. This is The Lowdown. We got rounds of golf to give you here in this 2 o'clock hour. Sam Amick, our KHTK NBA insider, is going to join us here in just a couple of minutes. We will get these golf passes to you at 2:45. We'll give you the exact time because we're in a giving mood here on this Wednesday. 2:45, tune in. We'll make sure you are all set up your opportunity to win those passes. We'll touch a little bit on the college football playoff rankings here. Chip Kelly, where's he headed? Mm-hmm. Potentially, maybe, possibly?
Lots of choices.
Apparently,
yeah.
Strangely enough. We'll get into that at 2:30. As you heard Chris mentioned, Ezekiel Elliott has withdrawn his appeal. He will serve his full 6-game suspension. That puts him back. Is that week 16?
Yeah.
And we bring in our KHTK NBA insider, Sam Amick. Sammy, we were just talking about the Bleacher Report article noting a number of NBA players, particularly the really good ones, Kyrie Irving, Dame Lillard, our very own Garrett Temple, that have gone vegan. Are you ready to come over to the good side and go vegan?
I don't think I am, guys. It's funny, probably, though, more than ever in the last couple of months, I had a few short stretches where I was, you know, skipping over the meat option and going heavy on greens. And I was just talking to someone the other day about how it is kind of illuminating and eye-opening that, you know, you feel different all of a sudden. So, you know, I get it. And then you obviously got different degrees of meat and the stuff that you should probably stay away from even more than anything else. But interesting story. Tom Haberstroh always done a really good job, and he moved from ESPN over to Bleacher Report. And I haven't read it yet, but I've seen a lot of the buzz, and it seems like a pretty interesting read.
So then you're ready to make your NBA playing debut, Sam?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's the key question, right? Like, what's the payoff for me professionally? So if I go vegan, do I get like a film crew to come, you know, document how I type faster and I think more clearly? You know, I don't know how it kind of, you know, what the ripple effect is and how it manifests itself. But no, I don't think my NBA career is going to be part of my story.
You never know. I mean, I will say this, though. Traveling as a vegan is a bitch.
Yeah.
It is the worst thing because no one cares. Like, you go.
Damien, so you are a vegan?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I thought I had heard that before.
Yeah.
Ross, where are you at?
Far from it. The exact opposite.
Jay Ross and I are the opposite on virtually everything. So, okay. Let's shift gears here. Let's talk about the vegan, Kyrie Irving. Boston's won 13 straight, Sammy. Can his regular season, is it possible his regular season performance can validate his desire to leave Cleveland, or does it only matter what happens in the postseason?
Yeah, I mean, I'll probably go with the latter and say it only matters what happens in the postseason. I'm sure the Celtics fans, like, even if Boston falls in the conference finals or something like that, I'm sure Celtics fans will appreciate having had some fun along the way. It's a lot better than having Kyrie come to town, Gordon Hayward getting hurt, and then winning 30 games. And clearly that's not the direction they're headed. But grand scheme of things, you know, the global outlook in terms of perception and how the Celtics will be judged, yeah, it's the playoffs. It's funny, you guys are always very kind about, you know, shameless plugs that come from my direction. I talked to Isaiah Thomas this week, and then should have a lot of stuff coming from him over the course of the next couple of days. But, you know, that entire subplot and that twist in the trade, I'm just dying to see how it all turns out, because you have, you know, stakes that are very high on both sides in terms of kind of the way these guys get perceived. But Kyrie is the guy who wanted out so far. He gets, you know, two thumbs up, an A-plus grade. To do what they have done without Gordon Hayward has been shocking, and you know, we'll just have to see if they can keep it up.
You know, Sam, Damian and I were talking about that earlier, and it's probably totally unfair to Boston, but I feel kind of on that last comment you're talking about where they really probably will just be judged on their postseason. And if I had to guess now, I don't feel like they're quite there, but I see what they're doing at 13-2, and they're number one defensively. There's all things that would lead me to believe that they could do it, but I don't. Am I missing something there, not believing in them just yet?
I think by and large, you're probably following your, you know, instincts as a longtime NBA observer and knowing that some of these trends likely won't continue. And I'm not rooting for or against any of these guys, but I guess like one of the questions that comes to mind is, can Jason Tatum as a rookie really keep playing this well? You know, just shooting lights out, you know, from three and getting it done on both ends of the floor. Can Jaylen Brown keep playing at this level? Marcus Smart and the rest of that core. You know, Al Horford is a known commodity. You know what he's going to do. Kyrie's a known commodity. And as good as he has been, if you look at his numbers compared to last year, it's still the same player. And, you know, he's been great in clutch. We knew he was that kind of player. So it's the new characters in this play, I guess, are the ones that I would look at. And that's the thing. And then on the flip side, it's what are the Cavs going to look like going forward? And the part that I think will be fun to watch when it's May and this, the games matter a whole lot more, is from a psychological standpoint, if you're in the Boston locker room, you know, if they are going to take down the Cavs, it's going to take somebody, I think, like Kyrie, who has been in a locker room with LeBron, to convince those guys, you know, kind of mentally and spiritually, if you will, that, you know, we have what it takes and we can take down this guy who's been getting to the finals for 8 years in a row. You know, that part, there's just no way of knowing, but it's just incredible how well they're playing.
We're always happy to plug your stuff here, Sam. You got the A to Z podcast, which we'll talk about here in just a few minutes. Great interview with your partner, Jeff Zieglet, and Bernard King that was on this week's edition as well. But you mentioned the Cavs, and you talked to Draymond Green, and I thought this was interesting that you posed this question to him. You talked to Draymond Green about the Cavs, and what would his worry be if he was a Cavs fan?
I did. I'm not above, going to Draymond. I mean, you feel like you could ask Draymond about, you know, about the stock market and how it's moving on that day, and he'd probably still weigh in. He's one of those guys that he's never going to say, why are you asking me that? So he puts on his scouting hat, he talks about the Cavs, and I thought his insight was interesting because not only is he a high-level, high IQ basketball player, but he's a guy who is very tight with LeBron James on a personal level, even though they battled on the floor. So the LeBron stuff is what jumped out to me with him talking about the minutes LeBron is playing and the fact that just nobody in this league should be playing 40 minutes a night in November, let alone I think it's 6 out of 14 games so far where LeBron played 40-plus. And then to take his point a little deeper, his thing was, if LeBron's doing that, I know him well enough to know that he's doing it for a reason. He sees certain vulnerabilities in his team, and he knows that this is what he needs to do at this point in time to get them going in the right direction. So then the question becomes, is that sustainable for 82 games and the marathon and going all the way until June? You know, that's kind of the stuff he highlighted, you know, and then on the flip side, the Warriors are just destroying teams right now. So, you know, two very different situations.
Yeah. And, you know, we've talked before on the show, Sam, we've had you on about how the NBA is actually really good at their passive-aggressive tweets, social media presence. So between what Draymond's saying about the Cavs, what Kerr then says about Boston, how they're the team of the future in the East, is that just them being honest, or are there any kind of subliminal messages there?
Jay, I apologize. Give me that one more time.
So I was just saying about what Kerr had basically had said, that he looks at this Boston team as the team of the future.
Yeah.
And then what you just said Draymond said, it just is there more to it, or is it just really those guys just kind of saying what they feel?
I don't know. There's probably a little bit to it. I feel like I got to completely take off my naivete cap, because like the way these guys roll these days in terms of being passive aggressive on social media, being aggressive aggressive in LeBron's case recently, it's like there's probably always some undertone, you know what I mean? Like, but it's also true what he had to say. The way the roster is built, their salary cap situation, their draft pick situation, their coaching situation with Brad Stevens being, you know, quickly essentially recognized as one of the best in the game. They do look like the team of the future in the East. And I've seen some people try to kind of insert Philadelphia into that situation. And I get all the hype and the excitement about what's going on with the Sixers, but you do not have as many known commodities in Philly, not even close, as you do in Boston. You have a lot more question marks about that young core and what they might ultimately become. So he's not wrong. I mean, in Cleveland, it's rare that you can have a team that old that is that good. And even though the record's not great, they're 500 right now, you know, they are going to be a very, very good team, but they are old. It just is what they are. I mean, LeBron's 33. And he's still getting it done at an extremely high level, but you can't be the team of the future if you are old. That's just kind of an obvious deduction there.
Sam Amichar, KHDK NBA insider from USA Today, with us here on The Lowdown. Sam, Brian Windhorst of ESPN had recently done an interview where he said that, you know, you mentioned the pick that the Cavs have. LeBron really wants that pick moved now in order to get something or someone that helps them right now. Management, allegedly, has been a little bit reluctant to do that, and they look at that as a rebuilding piece if LeBron leaves. Have you and Jeff had any conversations about that? Have you heard that conversation taking place in the Cleveland offices there?
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, the updated intel in terms of, you know, we haven't talked about that in the last couple of days, but we have definitely talked about it. And the message coming out of Cleveland, like you already highlighted, Damian, was, you know, a real extreme reluctance to give up that pick. And I think safe to assume that Dan Gilbert, the Cavs owner, has everything to do with that. And that idea that if LeBron left anyway after they traded that pick to get something to put them over the top this season, then it's going to be another salt in the wound. And that does, even that sells it short. I don't know how you would describe it. You know, if LeBron leaves again, there's going to be a wound completely full of salt already. But to do that without having the kind of pick that could help you pivot and start the rebuilding process and send the message to your fans that we're going to be okay, that would be tough. Because as you guys know, fan bases, it's always about hope. And if you have to start over with absolutely zero hope, which is, you know, essentially what Cavs fans would have if LeBron left and you didn't have that kind of a premier pick, that's really tough. And then, you know, the greater context, obviously, is the history. How in 2010, you know, Dan Gilbert made a promise to Cavs fans in that, that kind of offensive, politically incorrect way that he chose to do it in that letter, telling them that I will never let this happen to you again. So that's where this whole saga is getting kind of interesting. And even another offshoot that has been discussed is that LeBron wants to be an owner one day. And, you know, I guarantee you that, you know, if Dan wanted to have a conversation with him right now about how potentially that could happen down the road, that's something LeBron would love. And maybe that would help them in free agency, but all indications are that that's not the case. So you're seeing, you know, these people who are working under the same roof all of a sudden, you know, have competing agendas that might have a ripple effect on what happens between them. It's kind of a lot to get through, but it's pretty interesting stuff.
Sam, so what are you tracking now? Like, what are you working on that's maybe caught your eye in the last week or so?
Well, this Isaiah Thomas stuff has kind of got me today. You know, he's putting out a docu-series through the Players Tribune starting tomorrow. That it's kind of a cool story. He's, as you guys, you know him a bit from his time in Sacramento. Smart guy, and so he actually started his own media company called Slow Grind Media. And so on the, you know, while it's coming out through Players Tribune, which a lot of guys are doing these days, the project itself is something that you know, he's had a guy, a good friend of his, shooting going all the way back to his days at Washington. And so I'm writing about how Isaiah is, he doesn't know where his story is going next, but he's determined to be the one telling it. And so he partnered with this guy, TJ Regan, back in his Washington days. And TJ has been filming and chronicling like every step of his journey. And ultimately, he wants to do a movie about his life. Now, that's way down the line. But it's kind of just an interesting offshoot to what is an already interesting story, because the other stuff that he and I got into was certainly how he's feeling, when he might be back, the hip injury, partnering with LeBron, how it's going to look, you know, the Celtics trade, if it still stings. You know, we get into all that stuff. So Isaiah Tay and some, I guess, the Draymond stuff, and we just had our rookie rankings, MVP rankings. You guys know how it is. We're always pumping out a lot of content.
I'm sorry if I missed this. Are you in Oakland? Or are you headed to Oakland?
No, I'm home.
Okay, are you going to Oakland tomorrow?
No, what am I missing? They're out of town.
Oh, that one's in Boston.
Yeah. Oh, that game's in Boston?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was in Oakland.
Yeah.
Oh, well,
yeah,
what the hell do I know?
I'm probably going to that Portland game in Sac on Friday.
Okay.
But I'm here. Yeah, I'm going to be just kind of tracking. I didn't go out to that Boston game. You know, the Warriors have got a fascinating roadie where they go Boston, Philly, and then Oklahoma City, which is going to have, you know, I'm sure, some fireworks. So they're on the road, you know, and I'm on the home front doing my thing.
Yeah, I don't know how I missed that, man. My apologies. I'm going to send you. You mentioned
you got to eat more meat. If you ate meat,
it's going to come to you, David. Yeah, Sam, tell him.
Damn, KO messing up my memory here. I kind of want to shift gears. You mentioned some of the things that you got going on with Isaiah Thomas, Draymond Green. the rookie rankings, all those different things you do to push out content. You and Jeff are also really ahead of the curve when it comes to different things. Like you had a trainer on recently who talked about injuries. Carl Anthony Towns he's the latest big name athlete, big name person, I guess, to add his name to the legalized marijuana conversation. With state laws kind of all differing, do you think the NBA will be the first to kind of take action when it comes to marijuana?
You know, they might be. I went back and I read the interview, that he did with Nick Friedell of ESPN. And very thoughtful. Carl's a very smart guy. Talked about how, he studied kinesiology at Kentucky. His mom has been, working at Rutgers in the medical field for more than 20 years. And so the part I appreciated about his perspective was, like, for anybody who hasn't read it, who didn't really know the story, this is not just a guy saying, legalize weed. I want to smoke. This is the farthest thing from it. It's extremely thoughtful. He talks about his girlfriend has a nephew who is autistic and the medical benefits that came from that and how he has seen in his life that, when regulated a certain way, certain medicinal properties of cannabis have just improved people's lives. And he wants that opportunity there for certain guys in the NBA who might be able to benefit from it. But I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. Everything I've heard is that it's a little counterintuitive, but there's been some pushback from the player community, not the league, but the players who have a kind of a nuanced concern about perception. They're smart enough to know that if you don't package this development in the right way, that you're going to have a lot of mainstream America rolling its eyes and saying, oh, shocker, the NBA of all leagues is, the guys who want to smoke weed whenever they want. And they are sensitive to that perception. And so that doesn't mean it's not going to happen. I've just been fascinated by how they're trying to navigate those waters. And, it seemed like a year and a half, 2 years ago, that it was going to get legalized relatively quickly. And it was definitely something that was going to happen. And now it's a little bit of a holding pattern. I think they're trying to figure out how to cross that bridge. So I don't know the timeline. I think Carl's interview, to be honest, it helps because, if it gets traction, if people read and educate themselves on the actual reasons that these guys think it should be legal, then the perception might be different. But I think it's going to be a while.
Well, I don't know how the NBA is going to navigate its waters, Sam, but you did a fantastic job of navigating those waters, of avoiding saying what America would look at the NBA of all leagues as the league of legalizing, as the group that legalizes marijuana. You did a fantastic job of kind of.
I mean, they're not stupid. These are smart guys.
Oh, man. Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's the thing. And that's, not to go too, come on, we know the climate we're working in, living in
right
now, politically, culturally, they kind of don't want to fall for that okie doke, and they're trying to do it smarter and do it better. And I give them credit for that.
Yeah. And without and I apologize, I have not seen Carl's column, and I've heard the same thing about, medicinally with children or people with seizures, there's some benefits there, but I'm trying to think for the NBA players to avoid that perception. Recovery, or I don't know what else would be the benefit for actually NBA players.
Yeah, I mean, there's recovery. Steve Kerr has helped on this front as well. And to be honest, that I don't know how calculated that was, but Damian, I think you're kind of hinting at what I'm saying here. Like, the longer I do this job, you get instincts about the PR game and, the way things are rolled out, the way things are executed publicly and why they're done so. So when Steve Kerr became kind of an unofficial spokesman for why medicinal marijuana should be legalized in the NBA, I don't know if it was deliberate or how intentional it was, but I thought it was kind of genius. Because honestly, if you want to have like the soft rollout, why not have the universally beloved white guy come out and sing these praises, talk about medicinal marijuana. And then now you have a guy like Carl, who's very relatable across a lot of spectrums. So I don't know if there's somebody in the NBA PR office pulling these strings, but it is the smart way to kind of over the course of time educate people. But to your question, Jay, it's, I think it's that idea that, physically, whether it's recovery, whether it's even things unrelated to basketball, I mean, it almost felt like Carl was hinting at if you have a player, I mean, like JaVale McGee openly jokes about how he has OCD, and that's just to use one example. If you have a guy who has some sort of condition like that. And then maybe it's an option that would be afforded to a general citizen, but not to an NBA player because of the league's rules, then maybe that's, the incentive to change. I think there's a lot of examples probably.
Yeah, that's completely how I took it too. Like I almost didn't look at it from a basketball, from anything on the court perspective. It sounded like it came across as something totally different, which is why I brought it to your attention. And it's a great point about the NBA PR when you talk about what Steve Kerr does, what Greg Popovich does, and what Stan Van Gundy has just recently said. The optics, we use that term a lot here on this show, Sam, the optics of those men delivering the message is a whole lot different than the optics of a LeBron James or a Kevin Durant or a Karl Anthony Towns delivering those messages.
Yep, I agree. And it's obviously sad that, that if certain people delivered certain messages, then you're going to immediately lose a certain faction of society. But, I think that from the anthem stuff to social issues, there is a pretty high-level operation going on in NBA circles these days when it comes to trying to resonate with as many people as possible. That's partly why you have not seen as many NBA players take a knee, because they have almost universally decided that the message, and it's without a hint of, slight on the NFL, that the message falls on deaf ears, because they think that, using other means to get your message across is more effective. And if you go too far one way, then I think you lose a little piece of yourself. If you go too far the other way, then you're just not effective. And that's, I think, the balance they're trying to strike.
NBA Hall of Famer and University of Tennessee graduate Bernard King. He's got a new book out. He's on the A to Z podcast with Jeff. You can download that on your favorite podcast platforms. Here, Sam and Jeff talk about everything going on in the NBA every single week. Sammy, we appreciate you.
I know y'all got to run. Did you catch that interview? Sammy?
I did, absolutely.
Yeah, I thought he was good, man. If folks got to go listen to it to get this comment, but, I need some ducks to come to my front door every day and remind me to get rolling. I mean, I thought he was really, really interesting.
He's doing a great job on this book tour. He obviously did a stop in Washington with his Bernie and Ernie partner, Ernie Grunfeld. They went to the University of Tennessee together. I saw a number of interviews done with those two there. And Bernard is nailing this this media tour. He's done a great job.
No, I agree, for sure.
He's an interesting individual. Thanks, Sammy. We appreciate you. Obviously, again, you can catch up with Sam USA Today, catch up with him on Twitter and all of that good stuff. Always one of the best conversations of the week there with Sam Amick. I came across that Karl Anthony Towns, and that was we generally don't prep guests, when we talk to him. But I did text Sam, and I said, hey, I don't know if you saw this Karl Anthony Towns interview that he did, but I want to ask you about it, because they had done an episode about legalizing marijuana, mm-hmm. I think like last year.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know if you've seen this yet, but I just want to give you a heads up. This will probably be kind of the final question, final topic. It'll be one of those off the wall things that I come at you with. It's like, okay. So obviously he went back and took a look at it, but it's a really interesting interview from Karl Anthony Towns.
Well, and even the way Sam kind of laid that out, that was interesting too. Just with Kerr being one of the people in the forefront, now Karl Anthony Towns with his background. And we know the NBA is the most progressive league. I don't even think it's close. By far they are. So. Yeah. If anyone, I would believe it would be the NBA, but there's just a lot of different things to worry about there, because you're in different states, different, you got Toronto, you've got different areas that you've got to worry about, and different areas that have more of a belief in legalization, others that don't. There's just a lot of different things that got to kind of navigate through.
We'll come back, man. Chip Kelly, your boy?
Mm-mm. Oh. No.
Apparently, Chip Kelly's up for a number of jobs.
I can believe that, though.
Including one that I don't think is going to work, and his name is tied to this one pretty strong. We'll touch on that. We'll get back into the college football playoff rankings and Hawks, Kings tonight. Are you aware of the last time the Kings won in Atlanta?
Sadly.
I had no idea. We'll give that to you as we continue here on Sports 1140. Great stuff there with Sam Amick, as always. Club Corps, we got your chance to win some free rounds of golf at three of the area's best public golf courses: Empire Ranch, Turkey Creek, and Teal Bend Golf Clubs. We've got this for you now. I don't know what to call this. We have your free round of golf. We have
It's golf.
We have golf for you right now. Call for golf. So we'll do it. Call for golf. 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140, and we will get you all set up with your golf. That's how we roll here.
Yes.
On the lowdown. We give you golf. College football playoff rankings came out. We didn't really touch on this. I guess it's good. It appeared the Ezekiel Elliott stuff was going nowhere. Once this last appeal finally got rejected, I guess. I don't know how to form this, but I didn't think this was done. He was going to serve six games. Yeah. He just kind of became resigned to that.
Which, you know, I was trying to bring this up when it was happening, but because we didn't know. But now that we know it's to this point and he's going to serve the games, do you think if he knew he would get here, would he have done it earlier? I think he would have. But you got to fight for it if you think you can win.
Yeah, I wonder what is the advantage to him giving up the appeal now? You know what I mean? Because if you lose the appeal, you serve six games no matter what, right? Mm-hmm. And we're probably past the point. He wasn't going to get an appeal before December 1st, so he was going to serve four games. And then anything after that would have been, you know, would the NFL have reduced it on its own? Like, what would have happened from
right.
there? But you continue the fight. And it's perception.
Yeah.
It's just perception. I mean, I don't know. I don't know where to go with this. If he didn't do it and he was fighting to prove that he didn't do it, then fine. You're not going to beat the NFL. Like, that's been established. But I guess it's
good
that
it's
finally over.
Right? I mean, I'm exhausted to the story. I'm not even living it. He's living it. He's got to be exhausted.
Now everybody's annoyed by
it.
Like, I think even Cowboy fans are annoyed by
it. Yeah, today to me, I was like, oh, good. We have some resolution. Like, okay. All right, I'm done with it. Let's move on.
And I'm sure Jason Garrett is like, all right, now we can focus on the next six games because we're going to have to implement a game plan for the next six games. We did not just worry about Ezekiel Elliott. They better figure out the Tyron Smith situation before they worry about the Ezekiel Elliott situation because they have a couple of capable running backs. They have a very capable fullback there, and they just abandoned it all together because their quarterback was getting annihilated for four straight freaking quarters.
Right.
College football playoff rankings came out. Alabama at number one, Clemson at number two, Miami, the U at number three, and Oklahoma at number four, Wisconsin, Auburn, Georgia. Notre Dame, Ohio State, and Penn State round out the top 10. I thought USC might creep up in there. They're at 11. You had Oklahoma State at 10 yesterday when we did our predictions.
Oh, love.
All the way down to 13.
Yeah.
Again, we can play with the scenarios all we want to. More teams are going to lose. Probably not this week, unless you're Wisconsin. Wisconsin's got Michigan this week, and I'd keep an eye on that one. I don't see Miami losing to Virginia. Maybe, I mean, Alabama and Clemson are both going to roll. It's going to come down to those rivalry games in rivalry week. That is not easy to say in the final regular season week of college football. And then, of course, the conference championship games the week after.
Yeah, the one I was looking at yesterday when I saw the rankings come out was, all right, who's – because there's always a team or two at the end that we say, hey, they should be there. Remember there was a couple years ago we were talking about – or was it last year even? Like, OSC is one of the hottest teams at the end. Stanford a couple years ago. Who's the team that is on the outside now looking in that we might go, they're going to have a beef? They're the one that could be – upset. And the one team I'm wondering about as it's constructed now is Georgia. Now, because they have one loss, where do they go to? Six? Seven?
Seven.
I think they can still get back in because they obviously have another crack at either Auburn or certainly at Alabama in the conference championship game. And if they win that, would they be in? Or is there a scenario where they win that and they're not in?
No, impossible. They beat Alabama in the SEC championship game. They have to be in. They went from 1 to 7.
Right.
That's something that I don't think we've spent enough time
about. That stood out to me. So I'm like, they obviously were not impressed, but they love the conference.
If you weren't impressed, what the hell did you put them at 1 for?
Good question.
Because, again, I'm going to use a word that I feel like this is a word. I feel like this is the word of the week. I keep using the word optics. From 1 to 7, it insinuates that you just said it. They weren't impressed with what they had done before. What did you put them at 1 for? You could have put them at 2, 3. You could have put them at 4. They fall from 4 to 7. That's not as big of a deal. They fell from 1 all the way to 7.
What if it's Auburn that they're playing because they get out, they beat Alabama?
Well, Auburn, if Auburn wins the Iron Bowl, that means Auburn jumps to a top 4 slot.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
and Georgia
geez.
Beats them. Is that a scenario some weird way that
Georgia cannot be – there's no way Georgia would be the winner of the SEC with one loss and not be in the Final Four. There's no way.
And then you would have – well, Auburn would be out because that would be 3. But would Alabama be left out?
That's the question, right?
Because they didn't even play in the conference championship in this scenario.
It would depend on what happened with Oklahoma, and it would depend on what happened with Wisconsin. because then you'd start having conversation is, will the winner and will Alabama get in, and then will the winner of the SEC get in, and then will the winner and the loser of the ACC get in?
Yeah.
So it would depend on, you know, where Wisconsin goes. You know, I think we – it sounds like when we make our predictions Friday, you know, it's early. I feel like we're both leaning towards Michigan beating Wisconsin.
But in this scenario,
that's a disaster. Yes. That's a disaster for the Big Ten.
But well, let's go back to the scenario we were just talking about with Georgia playing Auburn in the SEC championship game and beating him. So they already lost to him by a ton, beat him close. What happens if we'll just pick Clemson winning out? So Miami would get another loss. Oklahoma wins out. They're already in the top four. And Wisconsin wins out. That's the mess. Because are you leaving the SEC out, which you could? Are you going to leave an undefeated Wisconsin out? Are you all of a sudden going to move Clemson or Oklahoma, who right now are in, out? That's the messy scenario.
You have Clemson. In that scenario, you have
Clemson or Miami. One of them. Whoever you have winning out.
But it matters. Because if Clemson wins out, they're they've beaten Miami, who will now have one loss. Mm-hmm. But we know that the committee didn't like Miami. Miami's undefeated now at 3. Miami was undefeated at 7. They got the bump because they went to Notre Dame. So if Clemson beats Miami, Miami has that one loss. That's the team that falls out.
That's one.
And so we have now we have Bama in there. We have Clemson in there. Oklahoma. And the scenario was if Georgia beat Auburn in the SEC.
Yeah, but do we have Alabama in there? Because they lost.
Yes.
And not in their conference championship game.
Yep.
Though.
Freaking Alabama, who's been number.
So you're leaving. Who are you leaving out? Wisconsin? Again, my scenario was.
Wisconsin.
Undefeated.
I'm leaving Wisconsin out.
Wow.
Undefeated in the Big Ten. Oh, gosh. That's bad.
I mean, we'd have to see it and
that's
how it plays.
That's really bad.
Because that means they beat Michigan and then they beat whoever in the conference championship game.
Wisconsin is I'm going to read this text, the top of the text line, because I completely agree with it at 44-11-40. Wisconsin is not beating Ohio State. Jason is presenting a what-if scenario.
Right.
And
undefeated
team in a major conference, do they get in over an Alabama team that lost once but doesn't get to play in their title game?
Yeah. You were going to have.
Wait a minute. Is there a scenario where they don't play in the title game?
Who?
Oh, Alabama.
Right. If they lose to Auburn, right?
But Auburn has two losses.
Are they both in?
Oh, only one of them is in that side of the. Because Georgia's on the other side. Georgia's on the.
Yeah, but they beat Georgia. They smoked them. Let me look that
up. Who did they lose? What would the scenario play out? Is it conference record only?
Yeah.
Okay.
But let me. But the two losses. I don't know where their two losses are from. I'm gonna look up the ACC really fast. No, they only have one conference loss.
So Bama and Auburn, and then they'd have the head-to-head. So Auburn and Bama would both have one conference loss.
So an Auburn win over Alabama.
I can't imagine how you keep Alabama out.
I can't either.
And I know that a lot of people on the text line disagree because we've gotten that a lot. You can't be in the Final Four if you don't win your conference championship. So, okay, let me present this thought then. How does Notre Dame ever play in the college football playoff? Ever.
With one loss or zero, and that's why the second one killed them.
They don't have a cut. If your argument is Bama can't be in if they don't win their conference, how the hell can Notre Dame ever be in?
And I would argue for some of these conferences, SEC, Pac-12, whatever, Big Ten, they are tough. They are difficult conferences. And even that, not everybody plays the same amount of games. And maybe if you're in a West and an East type situation where maybe you happen to dodge two of the better teams across the way, that's like, how are we really justifying some of this? It's really difficult.
I don't know. We'll give you I'll just give it to you now. Apparently, Chip Kelly's a front runner for Florida. Like, there's three candidates for Florida, according to Yahoo. Chip Kelly's one of them.
Will they ever get back to what they were?
Florida or Chip Kelly?
Yes.
Which one? Yes? Mm-hmm. Okay, good. The Hawks and the Kings play tonight. We'll touch on that. The Kings have not won in Atlanta in a very, very long time. That's next year on the Lowdown. Wrapping things up here on this Wednesday. Got Kings Live coming up in just about 12 minutes. No, we don't. We have Game Night coming up in just about 12 minutes.
Game Night.
Got Kings Live with Jason Ross coming up at 4 o'clock, and then we'll head to Atlanta for the Kings and the Hawks, where the Sacramento Kings have not won. I had to ask you this because I just didn't think it was true. The Kings have not won in Atlanta since March 3rd, 2000. and six.
Is that still accurate? Is that still a thing?
It's still a thing. The Kings are 5-25 in Atlanta since moving to Sacramento for the 1985-86 season. What? Really?
And based on their seven-game road losing streak for the Kings, where a lot of them haven't been competitive, the Hawks haven't won at home. This is the game where the Hawks are saying, oh, yeah, we're going to get right. And the Kings are thinking, oh, yeah, we're going to get right. That's pretty rare.
Kings fans, you want to slap in the face? Atlanta is favored for the first time all season today.
Wow.
Yeah. That's what Vegas thinks of the Sacramento Kings.
You have a guess at the starting five of the Kings that day?
2006?
Yeah.
No, I don't.
Adelman was coaching.
Okay, yeah, I could have done that.
There's a lot of coaches since.
So I don't even think I can name all the coaches since Rick Adelman.
No, that would be very difficult.
Okay, 2006. So let's see. Everyone, Mike was still here?
He was the starting point guard.
Is Kevin here?
Kevin Martin, two guard.
Brad?
Yeah, look at you. You're rolling.
But Paige's gone.
Paige's gone.
Ron?
Yep.
Oh, Francisco?
Not a bad guess. I don't know where he was. He didn't play that night.
Who am I missing? Is it an obvious one?
No. I mean, Kenny Thomas.
Oh, Kenny Thomas. Kenny Thomas is still getting paid for that contract, the Chris Webber deal. He still gets a – I think that's what opened up the El Rey restaurant, yeah, if I'm not mistaken.
Then they went with Sharif, Bonzi, and Jason Hart off the bench.
Jason Hart, Jason Hart reference, folks. Wow.
What's even more, I mean, Atlanta, who was 19-38 at the time, started Joe Johnson, Al Harrington, Josh Smith, Zaza Pachulia, and Royal Ivy.
I'm sorry, what was the last one?
Yeah, exactly. Royal Ivy. Real person.
That sounds like a celebrity's kid. Like, that's like Kanye and Kim's next baby.
Yeah.
Might what was right. the name again?
Royal Ivy.
Oh, Blue Ivy.
Yeah.
That's why it sounds so. That's Jay-Z Peterman. And Beyonce's kid. Yeah. Peterman, yes. Nathan Peterman. There come the wheels, folks.
And
it was only a matter of time.
You know who else came off the bench that day? Someone by the name of Esteban Batista. And that is
You're
true.
You're making this up.
So did John Edwards, Salim Stoudemire, Josh Childress, and Marvin Wayans. Real people. That's the last time the Kings won in Atlanta.
That's the landscape of the NBA in 2006.
Yep.
Could you say those?
The bench guys for the Hawks? Salim Stoudemire, Josh Childress, Marvin Williams, Esteban Batista, and John Edwards.
I don't know why I find Esteban Batista so funny.
Let me see his stat line for you.
Oh, dear goodness.
5 minutes and 22 seconds. Oh, he didn't pull the trigger. No shot attempts. One rebound. Two turnovers. He was a -7 in the plus-minus. He hurt them.
How did Royal Ivy do?
Oh, right. Well, he was a starter, but spot start. Just 8 minutes. 8:44. Oh. 0-for-2. He did have an assist. He was +2. They were winning the game when he was on the floor.
Plus-minus will get you.
Yeah, every time.
All right. The iPhone wasn't invented yet when the Kings last won. That's absolutely true. It sure wasn't. 2006 was a long time ago. Four consecutive losses for the Atlanta Hawks, the only NBA team without a home victory. I feel like you're going to say something else.
No, just one. This isn't even necessarily. It's just a. We talk about how the NBA has changed. What are we talking about? Houston shooting sometimes 50 threes a night. The Kings went 3 of 10. From three.
Wow.
Atlanta took 16.
I have tears in my eyes. Oh, that was
We
got to
get Esteban Batista on.
Please.
Yeah.
Oh, that is fantastic. Maybe he works in the front office there. I'm not sure. The Kings have the second worst offense in the entire NBA.
Yeah. And Atlanta gives up a lot of points. Maybe they'll fit together. Maybe.
Maybe. The worst offense in the league, any guess? You know? Or it may not even be a guess. You might know.
I did know, but I actually just blanked on
Chicago.
It. Yeah.
Chicago has the worst offense. Kings are right behind that. So,
on their way up, improving.
They got to. That's the only way you could do. Can't go from 1 to 3, man. That's not cutting it. You got to improve. So, as I said, we got the game night coming up in about 7 minutes here. Kings Live with Jay Ross coming up at 4 o'clock in the Kings in Atlanta. Final game of the road trip, and come right back. Garrett Temple's going to join us sometime tomorrow, and then they play again Friday.
Yep.
Dame Lillard's playing pretty well. That group is playing pretty well down there.
Yeah, a little home and home with the Blazers Friday and Saturday, so that's a little bit unique. It just feels like they've been on the road more so than home, but, hey, get these East Coast trips out of the way and just keep working at it. I mean, again, to me, tonight I will feel a little disappointed if they don't play well. I think they have a good chance of winning today, but
you know better than that.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's based on – I just don't see a lot of great talent with Atlanta, but the same can be said about the Sacramento Kings.
Sure. No, absolutely. Let's finish off with a text here in the final minute or so. How can you possibly leave Wisconsin out if they win out?
Yeah.
Undefeated in a power conference. That would piss off too many fans. It would seem that the NCAA is disregarding the Big Ten as a conference, not to mention that means that being undefeated means nothing. Even undefeated with a strong schedule, you are pretty much saying only certain teams are not allowed to make it in from start of the season, regardless of how they played all season. Well, we know this. We know that they don't devalue the Big Ten. And you know what? Now that we've put all this together, there's one thing I didn't take into account. I'm just thinking about Wisconsin winning, Wisconsin winning, Wisconsin winning. Here's why. Regardless of what happens with the SEC championship in Alabama, here's why they can't be left out. If Wisconsin goes undefeated and you want to dismiss it, okay, Wisconsin was the Big Ten. You want to go, you want to dismiss it? That's fine. Michigan's now ranked. Mm-hmm. They're 24th, and this is the college football playoff ranking. This isn't the AP. This isn't the coaches' poll. This is the college football playoff ranking. They've put Michigan at 24, and they've put Ohio State at 9. That means in your final 2 weeks of play, or well, it amount to be 3 weeks. Two of the 3 weeks, you would have beaten number 24 and number 9. That will get them in right there. That gets them in the top four.
One other wrinkle to that, they have to beat Michigan first. What if Michigan beats Ohio State?
Oh, hell. Shut up, Jason. I'm done.
But then I guess it's Penn State in there, right? Or I don't even know. That'd be messy.
Windows XP was still being used the last time Kings won in Atlanta.
Dial up.
Dude, I haven't used Windows in so long.
Yeah.
I really wouldn't know what to do if you put like a Microsoft computer in front of me.
That's all I have.
Well, you also have an iPod. That's
I
okay.
Do. Yeah, it's with not okay, apparently.
The spin wheel. You have the spin wheel iPod.
It's a shuffle.
That's all right. Yeah. That's all right. We love you for who you are, yeah. Jason. We love you so much. We're going to come back tomorrow. Week 11 of the NFL season kicks off tomorrow. Nate Lundy will be with us at 2 o'clock to get your fantasy football roster set. Stay tuned. Game Live is next. Kings Live, 4 o'clock. Kings, Hawks, 4:30. We'll see you tomorrow at noon.